Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David, of course, joins us live on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast David over the weekend and also on Mondays in our noontime hour. David happens to be a PBS TV correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and also David, of course, has his own website, themediabeat.us. That's themediabeat.us. Let's bring him on board. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. The Mueller report is out, kind of, but we can get past that, kind of.
Four pages are out, or summarized four pages by the Attorney General, out of a total page count of 300. So there's something to look forward to, perhaps.
You know, what's interesting is that, you know, we thought that with the Mueller report, we'd get past this. And, of course, we haven't, because it hasn't been open and transparent yet. But it's an interesting what's going on here. And in Britain, we thought we'd be well past Brexit by this time.
It's only, I've been counting, it's only 1,009 days since the referendum, which, you know, with a substantial majority, if not an enormous one, voted to leave Europe. You know, that coined phrase, Brexit, Britain exiting out of Europe. And sure, yeah, this is the very day that it was supposed to happen, March 29th. We're speaking on Friday morning, of course. And we're still nearer to knowing what's, you know, how this is going to happen, if it's indeed going to happen. There is even now a flow of opinion, we're told by some of the British newspapers, that the momentum has now moved to the other side, to the people who want to remain in Europe. Now, how's that for political confusion?
It's amazing. But one thing I've got to give, you know, you've heard of the old axiom of we talk about the British push and drive. Theresa May is just going to do this until she dies. I mean, she really, it's amazing.
But the latest political tactic from Theresa May is quite extraordinary. You might be used to politicians saying, look, here's what I want to do. If you don't agree with it, talking to her own supporters, this is, then if you don't agree with it, then I will resign. She did exactly the opposite. She said, here's a way to handle this problem now. Here's the approach we're going to take. If you accept it, I'll resign. As if it's now become a big bribe to dangle in front of her own followers, who are not very happy with her, of course. And here's the deal. You accept my plan and I'll go.
What's interesting about that is that years ago, Region 1 budget, I was involved in the defeat of a Region 1 school budget. Because once again, the superintendent at the time was getting a raise, and it was, you know, it was just too much. And at one point, after the budget was defeated seven times, the superintendent said, "I'll tell you what, if you pass the budget, I won't take my raise."
Not dissimilar.
But guess what? The budget was defeated an eighth time. It wasn't enough.
This may not be enough for Theresa May to get Brexit through either. The latest tactic is not just to offer to resign, but it's to divide the whole proposal in two and vote on only half of it anyway. On this day, the day that our British newspapers, by the way, the Media Beat can report, are universal in their banging the tolling bell for what was intended to be Brexit Day. This is called a day of reckoning by a lot of the newspapers this day. One last chance is one headline. The day of reckoning is the obvious one. It's all, you know, the 29th of March 2019 was supposed to be a big, big day, and it's best described maybe by the Daily Express, which never uses a cultural reference later than about 1950, I don't think. And this one comes directly from Britain's terrible time in World War II, 1940, there's a picture of the Palace of Westminster, and the headline on it is "Darkest Hour," a Winston Churchill phrase, of course, "Our Darkest Hour."
Well, you know, I can't help but lining up the British government and the United States government. The British government has been tangling with Brexit and other things, but take a look at our government when it comes to health care. Republicans had complete control, could not do anything with health care. They're still wrangling with that. Gun control.
Bringing it back to the front line, though, which doesn't seem like the most politically sensible thing to do. And the Republican Party in charge of government now, under our President Trump, of course, is saying that they want, he wants, the Republican Party to be the party of health care. That seems to be grasping desperately and self-destructively a very poisoned chalice.
It's not a very smart thing, and I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat, to scrap the plan before you have something, because you're going to take 30 million Americans off the health care roll right before a vote, which, by the way, you had 62 million votes, and you actually lost the vote count by 3 million. You take 30 million votes right out of your pocket, right at the stance, unless you have something that can replace it. But there is nothing. So if they end what is left of the Affordable Care Act, which I don't think is going to happen, it would leave 30 million people really without anything at all in an instant. And I just, you know, you can't see something like that happen.
And the party that went into the 2016 election that gave us this current administration had the good sense then to campaign on a on a double principle of repeal and replace Obamacare. The replacing part of it is clearly what is giving them the greatest headaches, and they seem to want to stick themselves back into that real headachy position again.
But as much as we, you know, Americans are looking at Brexit and what, take a look over in our own country when the budget supports the elimination of funding for Special Olympics, which of course was immediately turned around. And of course, when the budget was put in by the Trump administration once again this year, $0 were put in for the public television stations and for, of course, the grants that we get, public radio stations. Now, what people don't think around the rest of the world realize is that, of course, the budget is not decided by the President of the United States. It's decided by the Congress of the United States. But still, it's amazing where the way you see the blatant disregard of the public in both the United States and British, let's say, stories at this time.
It's certainly how the British press is, or a major slice of the British press is taking the Brexit mess. They're describing it on this day, the day that they were supposed to leave Europe, as certain sections of the press are doing this, notably the conservative papers that are in favor of Brexit. They're saying it's a complete betrayal of the public's wishes, as expressed in that referendum of 2016. And in many ways, I think when you get a real momentum building in your population and in the media that express the opinions of that population, that the presiding government is ratting on a major promise that it made to the public, then you have got the recipe for a really serious political crisis. And I think that applies on both sides of the Atlantic now.
Isn't it an amazing and a sad thing that the one thing David Cameron will be remembered for was opening the floodgates for Brexit?
It was just a totally idiotic.
It was
idiotic.
His great idea. Yeah. David Cameron had this wonderful idea of, okay, this is a difficult problem. Let's do something unusual for Britain. Let's have a referendum of the entire public. Look where that got us.
No, without any, this is, you know, I without any real research, referendums are tricky tools.
I'll say.
Speaking of understatement, but
Well, they're tricky over here, and referendums are done all the time over here, never mind when they're not done all the time.
But what, a national...
They tend to be on a statewide basis,
yeah.
Right?
That's so, right, yeah.
We're talking about a national... It's going way back. Some people, if you've never been here... I have a friend right now, he's from New York, he's lived in Paris for a long, long time, he's out west right now. And once you once you cross those Rockies, you could put several countries in there. The difference between space out west and in Europe. You're talking about a state that is think about California. A state that is the size of several countries.
Right. And as a state of mind, I think you're dealing with two very different political entities. We can see, obviously, some political parallels between what's going on in Britain and what's going on in the United States. But the sheer size and variation in the political dynamics of the United States make them very different from my old home country. I mean, in many ways, I prefer it. It's much more exciting. I mean, I live here now, and I'm a citizen here now. That was my choice. I mean, I'm not so enthusiastic about Britain's rather ossified, old-fashioned political system and its old-fashioned, ossified social attitudes. But America does benefit. I think in the end, it's on balance a plus enormously from its internal variations. I mean, the political virility, almost, the sinewy strength of America derives entirely from the fact. Well, entirely, that's probably an exaggeration, but it's got a very, very strong basis in the fact that, yes, different parts of the United States are almost as if they were different countries, but they're not. A pluribus unum is the slogan. We are one out of many, and that is American strength.
Well, as they always said, democracy is a lot like making hot dogs or sausage. It ain't pretty, but the outcome normally is worth the ugliness that it goes through.
And just
let's hope so in this case. I mean, in when we're discussing either one of the two countries, yeah. I think we are facing constitutional crises on both sides of the Atlantic, and I really hope the outcome is a good one for democracy, though, you know, it can get you worried sometimes. And I think it's worrying on both sides of the Atlantic right now.
The point of the parallel, poor though it may have been, is that despite the size differential, one of the things that is frequently lost in coverage is that there are many diverse views. Not everybody thinks the same thing. And unfortunately, it's very hard to parse what's going on when it's being covered through a lens of either or.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, there's a range of opinion in Britain on Brexit, clearly. On the other hand, it's such a complex issue. It's hard to draw out the threads.
Exactly.
Public opinion polling is now suggesting that a majority of the British public, you know, if given the chance, would vote the opposite way from what they voted last time. But it's not much of a majority. We're talking about 55%. And within that, I think there is so much sense of degrees and graduation between different people's positions that, come another referendum day, if it comes to that. And of course, there is now a strong momentum for referring it back to the people again, as people say, because, of course, this week Parliament moved on from its obsession with having what was called a meaningful vote, a phrase that
my favorite word.
Bothered you so much.
I still don't know what it is.
And had a series of only indicative votes. And on every single one of those indicative votes in Parliament, they could not get a single vote through with a majority of any kind. So prompting The Guardian, by the way, one of the sort of pro-remaining newspapers in Britain, had a very simple headline on its front page. It just printed the word no 8 times.
No. It was great. No. It's almost as good as falling spot. No, what was it? It's headless body and topless bar.
Absolutely, yeah.
But yeah,
we're in a position where we're blinding ourselves. And perhaps this is what happens all the time in journalism, because journalism, almost by nature, is in the business of generalization. But if we take the broadest of brushstrokes, we're going to miss what's really going on amongst the public of both nations.
Yep.
And you say it often enough about politics in this country. I mean, it's a terrible danger to oversimplify things. To look at Britain and say, well, 55% of the population have changed, are against leaving, when previously 2 years ago they voted for leaving. It's never as simple as that.
And, you know, here, if you had that as a poll result, you'd have to just be terrified, because you have a number of people who are perfectly happy to misrepresent their position to pollsters.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And
the margin of error is statistically between 3% and 5%. So automatically, you're running the risk of seeing that 55 come out on the day as only 50, and that's a gamble politicians should not be.
It's not interesting from an odds making standpoint. The other thing that is so difficult is because we have essentially, we live in a time where everybody has been given their own device, right? It's so democratic.
Across, we have the world in our palms.
Right.
Palm of our hands.
Yeah. All right. So we've got that, posit, you've got the world in the palm of your hand. So that means that what you look at, what you choose to do, however, your life on your phone, you're an individual. And then you've got this small matter of wrangling everybody who's being given leave to think just about their individual needs into some sort of cohesive community that either agrees or disagrees and is supposed to move forward. And I don't see how you make the two. I don't see how you can possibly square that. I just
don't. That's the essential conundrum at the whole idea of the heart of democracy. A majority rule is what it is.
Right.
But, a sensible, we've come to see that majority rule needs to be tempered by appropriate attention to minority views and minority populations. Trying to get something which... I think Parliament in Britain is a absolutely it's an extraordinarily sharp example of the lack of consensus. I mean, that's what you're trying to build towards all the time. You're trying to build towards a working consensus, and over 1,009 days, it's become very clear that there is no way that the Parliament, the mother of parliaments around the world, it said, the cradle of democracy, cannot make up its own mind.
They can't get that consensus because of the differing needs.
It doesn't exist. I mean, in that forum, at least, the consensus does not exist. How are we going to establish a consensus? Have another referendum? It seems the least likely way to establish it.
Right, because then the people charged with managing the results are going to have to go in the same. You're going to have a hard time getting it because it's not 70. Because it's not 70-30, you're going to have a hard time getting that consensus again.
Right.
A question.
And you fall back on what's, theoretically, in constitutional terms, is supposed to happen. In both countries, in our slightly different ways, we are, in fact, constitutional democracies, and we are representative democracies. That's why you have elections,
right?
Because of these complicated, which can't be complicated situations, which can't be boiled down to a thumbs up or a thumbs down. We elect a whole lot of people to represent us, and then as our representatives, they exercise the subtlety of judgment
right,
when it comes to deciding the nuts and bolts of policy.
Right, which is absolutely impossible to cover in the press in its current way, because there are so many. So basically you're saying this person thinks this person thinks that, this person
right,
thinks
and
the
other. Right, and it's become a game of you're with us or you're against
right.
us.
Right.
All the subtlety is drained out of it, and the sense of understanding the issue at all.
The subtlety
with
noise.
Any sense of context.
And this is my so. Speaking of which, here is my most recent question: what exactly are they voting on today? Because no, I'm serious. Because
in the parliamentary vote, which is only half of the question,
right? How do you do that?
Actually, what's happening? Well, they siphoned off all the elements of the big package deal. To concentrate purely on the ones that say we are leaving, and here are all the elements of our leaving. For instance, we will not be a member of the 20 something countries customs union. It ends up being a rather negative list of things. I mean, we will incur a lot of costs. Because that's what the treaty says happens when you leave the Treaty of Rome, which established the European Union in the first place. And what's being left out of this mix is any sense, it'll come along in another package the Parliament will vote on later, is the theory here. But being left out of the current one, the current proposal is anything to do at all with the future relationship between Britain and the European Union that they've left behind.
Right.
It's a little bit of prestidigitation, as we used to call, or at least some people in Britain used to call the magic show. You move your hands cleverly enough, and people don't see what you're doing around the back of. Outside of the area of your immediate interest, it could work, but I think the signs are that today it will not work, and we won't get a majority for this half measure, almost literally a half measure, any more than we've gotten majorities for anything else that's been put before Parliament in recent months.
All right. So if you ruled the world, or if I did, if I ruled the world, I would be on an information gathering mission because I'm not satisfied with the quality of the what I'm being told. But you have a better sense of what's going on. So let's pretend for one sec. Yeah. That
I don't think anybody has a particularly good sense of what's going on. That is the problem. I think you're right. Information gathering is at the core of this. A politician confronted with this situation in Britain who'd maybe just landed from Mars and was weirdly given the job of trying to understand this would say, well, we have to find out what the British people want, don't we? And all the mechanisms of that have been employed so far are so contrary and so complicated and in the end so viciously couched in oppositional terms that we can't really move and the system doesn't allow for movement. Why we've got the deadlock in this country too, I guess.
Well, except that let me.
Or it's a variety. It's a version of it.
I'm
so
not...
yeah, I think any Martian confronting this would say, well, what would say just as you did just now, Jill. We need to know more accurately what people want.
So I think what I would do is as the ranking Martian is I would go to the different MPs and say, okay, surely you're getting some phone calls, surely this is that, what do your constituents what are they saying to you? I'm not saying that one says yes, one says no. Of course,
I wonder if they would know authoritatively, and B, would they tell you the truth anyway?
I'm a Martian, so it doesn't matter.
Pollsters don't always get the truth out of Joe Public when they ask him or her in the street what they think. I think
representatives don't
elected representatives don't always represent the view of their constituents, because guess what? There are other people who have more influence over them than their constituents do.
Right.
People with money, usually.
Yes. Sorry, it was a very naive. But remember, I'm being a Martian, so I can do that. but back to my now I've got 2 minutes. Back to my naivete. What? Let's do a minute for each scenario. If the vote somehow succeeds, what's next? And if the vote doesn't, what's next?
If the vote does not succeed, then let's take them in this order. If against all likelihood, I think this gets through, and first of all,
it's only half a loaf.
It's half a loaf, but it's a loaf that gets through the British Parliament, which makes it something of a unicorn, if I want to mix my metaphors. something's actually got through the British Parliament. Then at least Theresa May's out of the thickets for the moment. But of course, she has already promised that she will resign. The Sun newspaper, by the way, has invented yet another word in the exit mode. Theresa's exit,
right.
Which isn't bad, and so she will have to go in sometime after the summer, probably as early as could be even as early as June. We would have meantime all the work to do somebody, not her, would have to take charge of the job of working out what the new relationship is between Britain and the EU.
Oh, good. Sounds like
so
fun.
So we're stuck with what the Times newspaper today calls another year before Brexit is actually sorted out. So that's one option. If it doesn't get through, then it's back to the drawing board again. And with the most likely outcome of that, unless some sort of miracle happens in the Palace of Westminster, is that we have by the 22nd of May, or even earlier, the 12th of April, which is another deadline involved here, as far as Europe itself is concerned, we'll have a no-deal Brexit. Britain will be leaving without any divorce agreement agreed between them.
Should have gotten a prenup. All right, thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Well done, you. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk, the Media Beat.
Thank you.
And, of course, you can hear David on the Media Beat here on Robinhood Radio live on Fridays, rebroadcast on the weekend, and also Mondays during our noontime news block here on Robinhood Radio.